morning, WTOB listeners. I'm Dylan Greenwood here with Jessica Armentrout. This is For the Record with Greenwood Law, and today we're going to be talking about domestic violence protective orders and the consequences that come out of those. Commonly, they're referred to as 50Bs, and that's just a reference to the statute. It's statute-50B. And it's actually, arguably, one of the most powerful statutes in our whole entire state, especially as it relates to how many people use it, come into contact with it, or on the other side of it. It's probably one of the more common ways in which somebody can go to court for something quite serious. And so the consequences of a 50B are much wider and have much more breadth than a lot of people realize, I think, Jessica.
And the impacts that it can have the rest of your life, not just for the duration of the 50B being in place, whether it's temporarily in place and then denied at a hearing, or put in permanent place for a year, and whether or not it's renewed, the consequences can happen while it's in place that can have lasting impacts on the rest of your life.
Absolutely, because you know it can show up on background checks, it can affect your ability to own firearms. It, you know, in the midst of having a 50B, you can receive criminal charges. I mean, there's any number of ways in which this can have far-reaching impacts on your life that, you know, you can just feel for years to come. But for a 50B to even be put into place, whether it's an ex parte 50B or an actual year-long 50B, and maybe I should clarify the difference between those for our listeners. An ex parte 50B is one in which it's done outside the presence of one of the parties. So it's just one party talking to a court, trying to justify why they need protections under this statute. And kind of the give and take of that is that you have to come back for a hearing within so many days, it's within 10 days. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, the court determines whether or not a year-long 50B, at least a year-long, it could be, sometimes they're longer than that. There are mechanisms for certain things that get done to people for there to be longer 50Bs than 1 year. Generally speaking, it's a year-long to see if that can get put into place. So there are certain limitations and penalties at the ex parte level and at the year-long level. So what exactly can a court order on a 50B, Jessica?
They can order you to be restrained from contacting that person, committing further acts of domestic violence, making any threats, contacting members of their family, can order custody of the children, can be temporary child support or some kind of spousal support even, if you check the right box. Ordered in that 50B, firearm possession, you can be ordered to attend an abuser treatment program. And staying away from that person usually means staying away from where they work, where they go to school, where they not just where they live, and not contacting members of their family.
Right. And let's just start with that contact. Is it only for direct contact? Like, let's say you had a 50B against me, and I know your phone number, and I call you up, I text you, I send you a message on Facebook, whatever, you know. I think logic would dictate that would be a violation of restraining order.
Direct contact.
But is that the only way?
No, you could indirectly contact me. You could message my mom. You could message one of my coworkers to try to deliver a message to me. You could leave messages for me in places you know I might find. You know, like for example, maybe we're exchanging a child or something, mm-hmm. and you left messages in the child's stuff for me, you know, like a little note something.
We
like
defended one time where a guy was accused of leaving notes on the windshield of a car.
Right.
And it came down to whether or not those notes came back to his handwriting, whether he mm-hmm. was actually there. I mean, there was any number of things, and we were actually able to disprove that one. But yeah, it's all types of indirect contact. And then if someone, let's say, you know, the court orders you no direct or indirect contact and you happen to violate that, what happens there?
Well, yes, you got to face those criminal charges, which is sort of a little bit more your area of expertise than mine, but they are a higher level of charges, being an A1 misdemeanor, which is the highest level of misdemeanor.
Right.
And it could be something like maybe it's just you went to someone's house, and normally that would just be trespassing, which is not exactly a good thing to be charged with, but it's not as bad as being charged with violating a 50B because you were trespassing. Mm-hmm. So it does add that extra layer. An extra consequence, I suppose,
yeah,
to your conduct.
You're right, and it is something that we are always cognizant of with 50B, whether it's defending someone on a 50B or we're, you know, are on the plaintiff side of a 50B, because there is that hook for domestic violence protective order violations. And like Jessica said, it is an A1 misdemeanor, and an A1 misdemeanor being the most serious misdemeanor in the state of North Carolina, you could face jail time of up to 150 days. And it's any type of contact. So when you think about the DVPO violation statute, domestic violence protective order violation statute, potentially relative to other types of A1 misdemeanors, it is a seemingly high penalty crime for what is potentially a low level offense, depending upon how someone violates the 50B.
Yes, like the consequences for trespassing, regular trespassing, are significantly less, like we were saying, than trespassing with a 50B. The consequences for simple assault are a little less than they would be if you assaulted someone that there's already a 50B in place. That would really double that one up probably.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And you know, the thing is, if you violate these enough, it can stack to where if you have three or more of these, and all of a sudden you're facing down a felony. It's not mm-hmm. just a misdemeanor at that point, it's a class H felony for habitual domestic violence protective order violation. And then if you have had other felonies in the past, that, you know, two or more felonies before that, and you get this, then that habitual can be habitualed on top of it, to where all of a sudden you're facing an even higher level felony with guaranteed prison time. So depending upon your prior record, things that you've done in the past, you know, this could have a snowball effect if there was some sort of violation. So a seemingly innocuous message that was left on somebody's Facebook wall while a violation of the 50B, and not necessarily the same violation as somebody showing at someone's house and assaulting them again, you know, those are two different things, but still a violation of the same statute for domestic violence protective order. I've seen people that do get that double stack, and then all of a sudden they're going to prison for a very, very long time. And so that it has potentially huge, huge consequences.
And that's sort of what, when I'm sitting in domestic violence court, and I see people without an attorney usually that just say, yeah, no, I don't want to talk to her either. I'll just consent to it. I
want
to grab them and say, you don't understand what you're consenting to. You don't understand the employment opportunities. I guess we can get into that. You know, that this might deny you at some point. You don't understand that, you know, the person on the other side could say you did anything in the next year, anything, just their word, and you'd be locked up for 48 hours, no questions asked. Like, there is, I just want to shake them sometimes, and I can't,
oh, yeah.
You know, because it's like, I don't even know their story. Maybe they really did something to deserve it. I don't know, but I've seen it before where clearly I was like, you might have won that hearing even by
yeah.
yourself. You really didn't do anything, but you just said, just went up there and said, no, I don't want to contact her anyways. And then,
right.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, it makes you want to cringe. But I'm glad you don't go up in court and shake them.
I'm not allowed
because,
to do that, but I want
yeah.
to. I want to so badly.
Yeah, no, that makes me, yeah, because you might get a 50C. You could
right.
get criminal
no, I know,
charges.
I
mean, there's any number of things.
But
so.
I just,
yeah, we don't want to have to represent you, Jessica. We would, but we don't want to have to.
Always hurts me a little bit.
You mentioned before that it can have big impacts on child custody and child support.
Yes, sort of. It kind of depends on what you've done exactly. I mean, what the nature of the reason you got the 50B.
So is it a guarantee? Would you say it's just a guarantee that if somebody files a 50B against you and you've got children with that person, are the children going to be affected by that necessarily, or is it maybe, is it more maybe. in relation to what was done?
It depends on kind of the nature of it. Obviously, it always depends on your judge too, because they're all going to interpret that different ways. But even then, it's not every judge. You can say one judge that gives you custody this time, and the next person he may not give custody to, and that would probably be because based on the facts and the alleged incidents that took place, like you allege and the judge finds to be credible that, you know, there was abuse also against the children, then maybe they're going to award you custody mm-hmm. in the 50B. But if your 50B is just you slapped me in the face one time, then a judge may still enter your 50B because that technically is domestic violence. They should, but they may decline to award custody of the children, or they may enter the kind of the opposite of the custody schedule maybe you were thinking when you walked in there. They may just say, well, mammy's never hurt the kids, or sir, she's never hurt the children, and they do week on week off. But if you walked in there thinking this was going to be your ticket to sole custody, you could be very wrong about that.
And we do see that. We see some people who do think it's going to be a ticket to that. And for some people, it is. I mean, it absolutely warrants it. I get it based off the situation. Yes. And what gets proven. It absolutely makes sense. And it is something that very much protects the children of this state. But I have also seen just as many cases where just within days of each other, there's a child custody action filed. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of days later, a 50B gets filed mm-hmm. about something alleging that the children need to be mm-hmm. repositioned with another parent. And it just seems a bit too convenient.
Yes, and our judges are, most of them get pretty good at sniffing that out after a while. But if there's a custody action already, you're not very likely to get custody ordered in the 50B, or the custody that you do get in the 50B says this is only until there's an order in that other file, right. So it's by no means permanent. And then a judge also could just decline to order custody at all and say, one of you needs to file a custody action and figure this out, but I'm not gonna.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just never know. So, I mean, there are definitely, I mean, obviously there's real domestic violence out there, but there are definitely some people that use it as think there's a shortcut to a child custody case, or a shortcut to getting possession of the house or a car or something, and it's not.
Yeah, and that's the way it should not be used, because then it really hurts the people that do legitimately need to use this statute.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people out there who do legitimately need the protections of the 50B statute. And, you know, you mentioned just now it can affect your ability to possess a vehicle and a car. Again, that's one of the reasons why it is so powerful. If you're on the opposite side of a 50B, if you're defending one, even the ex parte order, so before you ever get the chance to go in front of a judge can order you to leave your residence.
Mm-hmm.
And is potentially in the overall, the final order for the 50B, can order you to be evicted from your residence for that year, and that possession of the home go to the other party.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start thinking about that and being dispossessed from property, both real property like a house, or, you know, you're on a lease or something like, you know, an apartment, or your car, you know, because a judge can order that a vehicle go to somebody else.
Pets
are actually one of the more hotly contested things. Sometimes people get more riled up over their pets than they do their children.
Sometimes.
And that's pretty interesting to see that one, because I've seen some cases where the goal of the 50B was to get the a pet back.
Mm-hmm.
What you feel like the goal of the 50B was. because there was a lack of credibility for the allegations that were alleged. But you also mentioned, Jessica, that, you know, this can have far-reaching impacts on employment. What are some ways in your practice that you've seen that happen?
So a lot of companies, if you know, you might be required by your employment contract to notify them if this happens. If a domestic violence order or domestic violence protective order is entered against you, and generally not at the ex parte stage, because like I said, that was obtained without you having a chance to defend yourself, that kind of thing. But once the permanent one is entered, that I believe you go on some kind of national registry that certain employers can mm-hmm. find for certain jobs, and it can prevent you from doing those things, especially if you have a job in like law enforcement or something like that. It can be pretty severe consequences mm-hmm. on that. Whether or not you just consent to the 50B or you have a trial, it doesn't matter, the order's been entered. And even if your job is not necessarily as upset about you having the domestic violence protective order, maybe they don't check that registry, maybe that's not something you're obligated to report. If you're charged with a crime for violating it in the next year, that is probably something that can get you in trouble with a lot of jobs too. And then that has sort of an impact on, you know, sometimes the plaintiffs are thinking about this for, you know, they need to protect their children and all this stuff, and then they don't necessarily realize that if that causes the other person to lose their job, that's going to impact their child support that they get too. So there are a lot of things to consider, and
you know, because the impacts of this type of stuff, and it really, it's the same as you know, a criminal thing, and a 50B really is almost like you feel like it's a hybrid civil, hybrid criminal type thing.
I feel like it's worse in some ways, though, because the standard of proof to get a 50B is, you know, kind of like preponderance there. It's 50-50, or, you know.
Yeah, get over 50%.
Get over 50% believable, basically, is the way, dumb it down way of saying it. But everyone knows a criminal standard's beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. But then this has almost more consequences than a criminal charge, and you can't ever get it expunged. You can't. It has its consequences for your constitutional rights to your children, your Second Amendment rights, all these kinds of things that are even more severe than the consequences of some criminal charges.
You're exactly right, because you know, for a lot of criminal charges, you have a scenario where let's say you did a bit of active time. Let's say you went to jail for a little bit, or you went to prison for a little bit. You're going to, more likely than not, be put on some form of probation following that. Now, if you haul off and you violate your probation, that's a less serious allegation for violating probation because you didn't comply with the orders of the court than it is potentially for not complying with a 50B, a civil thing. So all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at a probation violation, which for a misdemeanor is a class 2 misdemeanor, technically. That's how it's looked at. And then it can have some other impacts, and they can extend you on your probation and all this other stuff. But then you're looking at, you know, if you violate a 50B just by, you know, potentially some very low-level contact, then you're looking at an A1 misdemeanor that we've talked about. We talked about how serious it is. Oh, and here's another thing. Just because the person on the other side contacted you first.
Yes.
Does not mean that that's a defense to it.
It says right on the order that the plaintiff can't give you permission to violate this order, and people just either they don't see it, or they ignore it, or they think it will be, I think they won't report it, but you never know. They always could.
Oh, I see it done all the time.
They always could.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I don't know how many times I've consulted with somebody and they go, well, I don't understand why I got charged with this, you know, this person called me first. Honestly, I was about to say, well, she called me first, because it seems like 9 times out of 10, it's male, female in that regard, where we're, you know, having to defend a lot of males involved in the situation. And they're going, man, she called me first about the kids, or, you know, she wanted to get back together or whatever else. And, you know, I thought it was okay. So, you know, we went and hung out, and then all of a sudden the next day, yeah, I'm getting the cops beating down my door saying that I violated this A1 misdemeanor. I'm going, what are you talking about? And I've heard that scenario quite a bit. And, you know, when you know, from our standpoint, when you're talking to somebody in that regard, you got to look at them and go, man, you know, we can do some stuff for you. But, you know, if we take this to a trial, it's not going to go well for you.
You did, in fact, have contact with
them. Right.
And it's, sometimes it's people think, oh, we're going to get back together. How'd you decide you were going to get back together without talking? But nonetheless, got back together for a few months. Don't even think about the 50B anymore. It's not a problem. All of a sudden, this relationship that was clearly volatile to begin with, there's a 50B, becomes volatile again in 6 months, and the 50B is still in place, and now they can violate you. Even though you were getting along great for 6 months, blah, 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 and it was no problem, and never called the cops. Well, now you've had an argument about something stupid, and they've decided they want to violate you now.
Yeah, my...
That threat is always there.
In that same vein, in general, my piece of advice I give to somebody going through a 50B with somebody else, even if the 50B doesn't get entered, is more often than not, you probably need to get out of that relationship.
Yes. If it got to that point, true or not, if it was true, obviously that's a bad relationship because somebody's behaving poorly, you know, and that's not a relationship that you need to be right. in. If it wasn't true, then someone's lying, and that's not a relationship you need to
and
be in.
And they're willing
either.
To do that against you.
And they're
you.
Willing to take a pretty extreme step to prove a point to you. So either way, it needs to.
Right. If you're just joining us here on WTOB, this is Dylan Greenwood here with Jessica Armantrout, attorneys here at Greenwood Law, and this is For the Record with Greenwood Law. And we're talking about consequences of domestic violence protective orders, commonly referred to as 50Bs. And we've been running down how this can affect your property, your children, child support, cars, pets, all this stuff, that a 50B can actually come back and basically just turn your whole life upside down. But one of the other ways, and we've talked about this before on prior shows, is with gun rights. So oftentimes if a 50B is filed, then all of a sudden, you know, you get put in front of a review board for your concealed carry permit. In certain cases, that concealed carry permit can be invalidated even before a 50B gets put into place. And then if you are found to be in violation of the 50B, whether at the ex parte level or for the year-long 50B after you have a hearing, either way, a court can order you to turn your guns over to the sheriff. If you do not comply with that and you either possess a firearm or you attempt to possess a firearm, you can be in violation not only of the 50B, but of North Carolina criminal laws and potentially federal criminal laws. So if you possess a firearm after you've been ordered not to pursuant to a domestic violence protective order, that can have huge federal criminal consequences on you. That's a pretty serious thing. So as you can see, punishments from and potential penalties and the way this impacts your life from a 50B are far-reaching, and they're very severe, especially in light of what we talked about before, how it's a much lower level of evidence to support it and get it entered in. Here this past week, though, Jessica, was actually a pretty interesting development in the 50B statute through a case that was decided in the North Carolina Court of Appeals. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time here in North Carolina, it had to be proven that you were in a personal relationship with the other party and that you committed an act of domestic violence against them for the 50B to be entered. And I'm kind of oversimplifying it, but those are the two major things. And the personal relationship aspect of it was narrowly defined as a relationship between a man and a woman. And but here recently, that case,
at least the dating aspect part of it was. I mean, yes. You could get it against a household member regardless, but the dating aspect,
correct,
or the marriage aspect was
correct.
Sex for a while.
Thanks for clarifying. And that just got changed, didn't it?
Yes, by the Court of Appeals. Mm-hmm. That came down and said that even though it says opposite sex in statute, it should be applied to read as though it were same sex, and so there should be no differentiation between the two. Because previously, I think with Amendment 1 a few years ago, then that gave the protection to married same-sex couples, because then they obviously could get married and meet that part of the statute. But now it applies also to people of the same-sex dating relationship who are just in a dating relationship, mm-hmm. even if they never lived together or anything like that.
Or they never got married.
Right, never got married, never lived together.
Right. And the Court of Appeals was basically said that the 50B statute was unconstitutional in this regard. Now, it you know, don't think that all of a sudden this whole statute just goes away because they said that it was unconstitutional. Basically, the Court of Appeals carved out this very narrow part of the statute and said it was unconstitutional, and came back and said, well, no, it should really, you know, read it like this. And the way they wanted to be read is basically any kind of relationship that's a dating relationship where people live together, whether it's dating, marriage, whatever, regardless of whether it's a heterosexual relationship or a homosexual relationship, then people are afforded the protections of the 50B statute. And this really does open the door for a lot of people to get some protection that they would not have necessarily gotten before, at least not in this way. because before this point, they would have only been able to apply for what's called a 50C. And the 50C doesn't have the same hooks or penalties with it as a 50B, does it?
Does not have all any of these criminal repercussions that we've been talking about here today. You can still get in trouble for violating it, but it's not quite the same as far as a couple extra steps.
Yeah, pretty much if you violate a 50C, it's a contempt issue, mm-hmm. contempt to court, and you get pulled back in front of a judge, and the judge decides what they're going to do with it based off of under the contempt laws of the state of North Carolina, and there's no possibility of that A1 misdemeanor. Well, now you do have the ability for a lot of people, a lot more people than just a couple of weeks ago that can get the protections of a 50B statute. And the other way to look at that is a lot of more people could fall under some of these other pitfalls of the 50B statute that we've discussed for the last few minutes. So that is definitely something that is new here in North Carolina. It's following a trend in jurisprudence across the whole entire nation. So that is a significant change. Jessica, thanks for joining us and bringing your expertise on these issues on 50Bs with us today for all of our listeners. And don't forget to join us next week, where we're going to be talking about a pretty hot button issue, contentious issue right now, and that's the First Amendment. It's gotten a lot of discussion here lately for a lot of different reasons. And so we're going to tackle some of those issues and discuss just how far the First Amendment goes, what it actually covers, how it applies to you, maybe even touch on some of the social media issues that come out with social media. So that should be a pretty interesting show that we do next Sunday, 10:30 a.m. here on WTOB. Don't forget to turn in and listen. But before we go, do not forget the Greenwood Law Bill of Rights. And that's first and foremost, I will not represent myself in a court of law. Second, I will not do law enforcement's job for them. Three, I will not make statements when stopped by law enforcement. Four, I will not consent to searches when asked by law enforcement. And five, I will not be my own star witness for the prosecution. Remember everyone, it's not a crime to know your rights. Stay safe. Stay healthy. This is For the Record with Greenwood Law signing off.